Preston and Steve Fun Size.
Well, our guest is on the line. Awesome. And I'm excited to talk to him. I absolutely, positively love the new song that we've been playing.
So good.
From the Raconteurs, Sunday Driver.
Yeah.
And I'm not a one-listen guy, and the first time I heard this, I'm like, this song rules. Not just Raconteurs, obviously, White Stripes solo work. He's done so much and is a multi-talented individual, and we are so happy to welcome to the show Mr. Jack White.
Yeah!
Hey, Jack, good morning. Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, no.
I didn't have the button hit. Okay. Hey, Jack, are you there?
I'm there. How are you?
Sorry about that, man. Hey, thanks for coming on, man. We appreciate you giving us some time today.
Yeah, nice to talk to you guys.
Listen, I've got to, there's a lot we want to talk to you about.
So much.
But I think it was really cool to see that you and Jack Black finally got together and had a moment.
You know, it's been a long time coming for the rest of the world to know that we've been friends for 20 years. We never took a photo together.
That's funny. Yeah, it was. Everybody was freaking out the fact that you guys did finally get that photo together. But you have known each other. I know way back when, it might have been like in 2006 that Jack introduced the White Stripes at MTV Awards. I think it was. Is that where you guys met?
That is where we met, yeah. That's what I remember, where we met. And then he introduced the White Stripes again a few years later at a live show we did at Tower Records, with the old Tower Records on Sunset. And then, we've been friends since then. He's a great guy.
That's cool. Listen, at the top of the interview, you know, I talked about the various bands and projects and things that you've had throughout your career. Is there a little voice in you that tells you, hey, it's time to get back to this, or it's time to move on to this project? How do you know when it's right to begin something?
I guess I'm really fortunate that I don't have to do any of those things. Like, I think back, you know, if I had been an artist in the 60s or 70s, they would have said, no, you can only be in this one project, this one band, and you have to do a record every year and all that stuff. So I've been lucky to not have to do anything. So it is just sort of deciding when it feels right for everybody involved. And that was Raconteurs. It was kind of strange. We didn't expect it to take that long. I think we only thought it was going to be a couple years. But after the last Raconteurs album, Third Man Records opened up. So that's what's been put a lot of stuff on my table for the last 10 years, Third Man. And so that's, I think it's sort of my fault.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you impress me as a classic Renaissance man, but a lot of times when an artist gets the label of a Renaissance man or woman, you know, there's a perception of, oh, they're sort of pompous and so on and so forth. But you're not. You're the stuff that you get involved in, you sense there's a genuine zeal for what you're doing, whether it be the records and the love of vinyl. I love your attention to detail. And I was watching a video, it sort of went viral, of you using an FM broadcaster in the mixing process to broadcast out to your car to hear how a mix was sounding. And I love that because I stopped mixing. I do production as well, just on a radio level, not to the level that you do. But I stopped doing it in the headphones a long time ago because that's not the way people are going to be listening to the way it's coming out. When did you have that epiphany to start doing that?
Yeah, it's sort of it was given to me as a present. I talked to my Jack Lawrence, who plays bass in the Raconteurs. I'd said that, you know, I heard that the Motown guys used to broadcast and go out to their car in the parking lot outside of Motown to see what it sounded like. And we thought, oh yeah, that's a big deal. Everyone does that. We all listen. Did we take a CD or a cassette or whatever it was? We always take it out to the car and listen to it. Most bands do that, but the idea that the twist I was trying to put on it for the last few years was broadcasting and then talking to the engineer while you're listening through a walkie-talkie and mixing the record while you're listening to it.
That's so cool.
That's what changes it up.
That's ingenious.
You don't know what it's going to sound like, I guess. And, like, if you hear a kick drum in the studio speakers, you have a gigantic woofers or something. Oh, the kick drum sounds loud, but then you go out to a car speaker, you might not even hear the kick drum. So you have to test it on different things like that. So, yeah, it works out good.
Has that dramatically influenced? I mean, are you finding yourself happier now and going through less of those, oh, my God, you can't even hear that moments because of doing this?
Yeah, because it's very funny because I used to do this in my last car, and then I got a Tesla a few years ago, and I remember my friend was saying, you know, your albums are going to dramatically change now because the sound of the Tesla is so different. The sound system. So people can mark your – if you listen closely, you can see the moment where I start mixing the songs in a Tesla.
the Tesla period, yes.
So, Jack, I'm 5 days older than you, so just make sure that you respect your elders as I ask you this question. No, but it's interesting because I think you know, just reading up on you, you credit Brian Muldoon with exposing you to punk music, and you know, you and I were listening to the current music of the time, and but I do remember those specific people that introduced me to it, you know, different types and different kinds of music, and there has been a lot of different innovations over the years. And is it crazy to you to hear that you are an innovator in, you know, popular music today?
It's kind of you to say that. Yeah, I really don't know. I just, you know, when you're younger, you listen to what's around you. And then if you're lucky enough to have mentors or people to look up to, you like the things they like. I had a lot of brothers and sisters. I have 9 older brothers and sisters. So they turned me on to a lot of different kinds of music. None of them were really that much into punk. So it wasn't until I worked at an upholstery shop with Brian Muldoon, where he started playing me punk music as a teenager. That's where I got into that whole new side of things. And then the blues, a deep love for the blues came after that. So it was kind of nice, but I think most of that did come from, yeah, looking up to other people, you know, and just liking what they liked. And then you figure out, as you grow older, what's good about it, what you can relate to and what you can't. But when you're younger, you just sort of like what your mentor is like.
Yeah. Jack, I wanted to ask about that upholstery part of your life. You work,
yeah,
and you are apparently very good at it. And you picked up some attributes or at least philosophies that you've applied later to music production. I want to bring up, I was reading in an interview something about the 3 staples. Do you know what I'm talking about and how you applied that to music? Could you explain that?
Oh, that was sort of like a moment I had when I was first learning upholstery. It was like I put 3 staples on a piece of fabric. To me, it sort of felt like it was left, middle, left, middle, right. There was the minimal amount you could keep a piece of fabric on the side of a chair.
Right.
And I thought, oh, that's a real good way to look at it. If those 3 staples were, that's enough to call it done. And and then from then on, you make it more and more interesting and more perfect or something like that. I still do upholstery. I still have my shop in Nashville. I rebuilt it in Nashville. So it's something I do in my spare time.
Jack, I wanted to ask about Sunday Driver, because like I said, when I first heard that, I fell in love with the song immediately. And I also hear a little bit, and I want to hear if I'm off the mark or not with that title, Sunday Driver. You know, obviously Drive My Car from the Beatles mentions that line. And I hear the riff in the song, and I hear almost a little nod to that riff that you came up with. Is it kind of a nod to Drive My Car?
Yeah, I think you're onto something there, because we had that was the only word I had in there when we were just jamming it. I had written the riff, but I hadn't really written the vocal. So the band was playing along with me, and you have like what's called a scratch vocal in the studio, where you have a microphone up by my mouth, and it's sort of recording, but it's not a finished take. So it's just so if I come up with any ideas, you just do it. But we're mostly recording the music, and I just kept saying, "Here comes the Sunday Driver." I don't know why I said that, and then I said I did a little lick that kind of seemed like a day tripper kind of riff there too. But then it's kind of nice. You just take a little idea or a word or a phrase, and then it launches off of that, and then the song sort of became about a guy who's sort of he's feeling protective of his sister getting picked up for a date. And then Brendan wrote his whole part in the middle, like, let's go for a drive. That whole middle 8 section is Brendan. And it kind of occurred to me, like, wow, that's the boyfriend's version of the story. Like, there's nothing going on here. We're just going for a ride.
So, and you were right. It was Day Tripper, not Drive My Car. I had the wrong song there. But listen, I want to compliment you on, I believe that, you know, there are several different kinds of songwriters and guitarists out there. There are people that can shred. There are people that play with a lot of emotion. There are people that come up with riffs, and you have the gift of riff. I think you've written so many songs, you know, and I could rattle off a bunch of them, you know, like Seven Nation Army and Icky Thump that have this iconic thing that grabs you. When those come to you, Do you immediately need to record them, remember them, have them ready to go, save them for another time, or does a song kind of play out right then and there to you?
It's funny. I think it sort of takes some kind of imagination, because I remember those riffs you just mentioned, playing them for people around me when I came up with them, and people thinking they weren't very interesting. You know,
it's, huh.
It's sort of like, you know, if you play them on an acoustic guitar for someone, they only hear it as the acoustic guitar you're playing for them. They're not imagining it. Like, you almost have to say, because I don't really think people listen to disclaimers, you know? Like, if you say, imagine this is a loud electric guitar with reverb on it.
Right.
You know, people are like, yeah, yeah, sure, go ahead, play it. You know, I think that's where songwriting and maybe some of that stuff, it comes in handy being able to say, play a song, a melody on a piano, and to be able to imagine what it could possibly sound like at its best or most intense moment or something like that. And then if you're able to figure out some tricks to make that come to life, then you're sort of getting onto something, I guess.
Jack, you're 11 days older than me, so automatically I look up to you and respect your opinion.
Because he's an elder.
Because you're an elder,
you
yeah.
respect your elders.
Yeah, I always respect my elders. I wanted to ask you about your love of baseball, particularly the Tigers, and your favorite place to go see a game, your favorite place to maybe play, any stadiums that come to mind?
Well, I still have to go to the Philly Stadium, because it's one of the, like, I only have six left that I haven't been to.
Wow.
So, and you guys have Harper now, right? So
yeah, and it's a great ballpark. We're biased, of course, but it really is one of the best in the bigs.
Yeah, I can't wait to check that out. Yeah, I got like about six left. I got Tampa Bay.
You can skip that one.
I gotta go to all of them. So Washington Nationals. I haven't been there yet. So I gotta do like a kind of an East Coast run and get the rest of those done. But the Tigers aren't doing so good this year though.
That's all right.
There's always time.
Hey, I want to ask. You know, speaking of professional sports. What is it like? Because I was watching the Stanley Cup Finals the other day, and for whatever reason, and you hear this all the time, I heard 20,000 fans in St. Louis going, like, how crazy is that for you to hear?
It's wild, because when it first started happening was about, I think, 2005 era, somewhere around there, when the Italian World Cup soccer team started doing that. In Europe, and we thought, oh, that was so great. Meg and I both thought that was, wow, how cool. But we thought this was just that one moment in time, and it was going to go away, you know, in a few months. And it's, what is it now, 15 years later, and it's happening in sports, every sport across the world. I mean, you see like a little league game, they do it, or hockey, basketball, and baseball. So it's crazy, because you can't really plan to do something like that. That's just sort of folk music in a way, because it's people chanting something. They don't know where it came from, they don't know who wrote it, and they don't care, which is great. That's the way it should be, and it puts a smile on my face every time I hear it.
Amazing. Obviously, we love the music, love the raconteurs, love everything, but I have to tell you and be honest, we quote and or play your clip from Walk Hard.
Oh, my God.
All the time. Yeah. It cracks us the F up. How did end up in Walk Hard as Elvis, the karate master?
There was John C. Reilly had called me up and asked me, hey, would you mind playing Elvis in this movie? And he started to explain the whole movie to me, and I thought, oh, that's pretty funny, but that's a dangerous little thing to do. I don't know if I'd be any good at that, and I could just make a fool of myself. You know, I told him, like, hey, we can try it, man, but if it's no good, don't put it in the movie, you know, because you want me to come out the next day. Would you come out to L.A. tomorrow and come film this? I'm like, okay, I think it was the next day. Maybe I'm wrong. But, it came out, and it was great, because I wish everyone could see all the outtakes from that, because it's so funny, all the things we did. And I did that kind of, like, talking like that nonsense, like, I did that for, like, there was a couple of takes where I did that for 3 minutes straight.
Yeah, look out, man!
Because at some point, it's just gibberish, you know?
Yeah.
Oh my God,
it's so funny.
I absolutely love it. You know what, you're a big fan of guitarists, obviously, and are you currently playing Eddie Van Halen's signature model?
Yeah, I actually was doing that last year. I did my last solo record. I did the tour. I used three guitars that were designed by other guitar players. You know, I did one that was designed by Skunk Baxter.
Yeah. Wow.
Brothers, and one St. Vincent. She designed a guitar for women, and I gave it a shot anyways. And then Van Halen's guitar he designed. So I thought it would be cool to see what it would be like to play guitars that other guitar players designed from scratch, to see what elements they like to have in their playing. So that was a pretty cool experience all around.
That's awesome. We've got a phenomenal guitar player coming in here in a couple minutes. Paul Gilbert is here, and he's performing in Philly. So I know that you know obviously you've been in It Might Get Loud was such a cool documentary, and to be able to hang with people like The Edge and Jimmy Page and these people that I'm sure you've looked at to for years and years has to be a bit surreal that you're now in similar company with them.
Yeah, it was wild. I almost felt like I was not old enough to be in that movie when they asked me. But they really, I had a lot of trepidation about that, even more than the Elvis thing. But it was cool because the director really didn't have a plan about what the movie was going to be about, which I really liked. It was sort of, let's just see what happens. Let's try some things out. And he let me do a lot of things that I just thought up. Like, can I build a guitar from scratch and you film it? Let's try it. And so he was really open-minded. So it ended up being, there are some interesting moments in there, especially just listening to Jimmy Page talk about the recording techniques that Zeppelin used. That's worth its weight right there to watch the movie, just to listen to him.
And you seem to thrive on not just current technology, but you really have an appreciation for retro technology and the sounds that can still be gotten from analog and so on. And do you do your own research on that type of thing and use those? Because, I mean, while there's something really raw about your sound, but you're not afraid of the current technology as well. There's some sounds where I'm like, how did he get that?
I think you should try to mix the new and the old together at times and find out what's beautiful about them both. If you, you know, there's always new technology coming out no matter what time period you're in. So you're always trying to find things about it that are interesting, that work, that are so sort of, I guess, soulful maybe. And then you sort of discard the rest. And then you try to do the same thing with things from the past. Like this amplifier had something good going on about it, the other ones around it, not so much. So you just you pay attention to all those kind of things. It's sort of this disease you get when you're younger. You, as a musician, if you love music, you start watching bands and what guitars they're using and what microphones they're using. And then you get into a studio and it's the same way. But the thing you sort of have to be careful about is to not just go down this road where you only care about gear.
Right.
You know, because it's very, you know, it wants to draw you in all the time. It's very shiny, and you could be distracted from being a songwriter or an artist because you can get just obsessed with gear.
I believe it,
and it can draw you in. And I remember I was very reticent to try these analog emulators that they'd started to come out, and but they started to get better and better. And you're like, okay, because you can't argue with there's a certain genuine warmth to the sound of a lot of the analog equipment, but you can constrain yourself too much and not see the forest for the trees. I wanted to ask you one last question concerning, you worked with Loretta Lynn to great effect and a legend. Do you love taking an artist like that or perhaps the possibility of working with an artist and helping them be their best and have their best expression? Is that something that really excites you?
Yeah, if I feel like I can actually help and add something to it by working on it, then I get really inspired. I've been asked to do, produce records by, records that were definitely going to be a number one, 10 million record seller, no matter what you put on it. But still, to me, I felt like I can't do anything with this scenario. I mean, I just can't add anything to it. It would be nice to say you did it, but it's better to only work on things that really speak to you and they feel right. I feel nice to look back over the years and say that to myself in the mirror or whatever. I've never really done too much things that I didn't want to do. And that's a very, very lucky thing to be able to say. And and also those things like Loretta Lynn and those kind of albums, they're risky. They're very dangerous. And that's a thrilling thing for me, is to do dangerous things like that with the hope that I have a feeling that the way I'm looking at it, something good could happen from this, but who knows? It could be a disaster. And there's like, that kind of scariness is great. When you think like, oh, this is shooting fish in a barrel, you know, we got this. We got this. It's gonna be great. And I think those things don't usually work out.
Yeah. No, it's cool. And it's cool you have the opportunity to take chances like that. But we're glad Raconteurs got back together. The new music, the actual album is going to drop on June 21st. How many tracks on the new album?
I think it's 12 songs.
Okay.
And, we're really excited about it. We just got back from Europe, and the shows have been just so electric. It's just teenage crowds and people just moshing and crowd surfing. It's really, really rock and roll.
One of the best shows I ever saw, the Raconteurs. And you guys bring it live. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Well, listen, we thank you for your time. We know you're a busy man, and you got a lot going on. We only scratched the surface of some stuff to talk about today, but maybe we'll have another conversation down the road.
Thank you so much for playing my music all these years, and thank you for playing rock and roll as much as you guys do. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Anytime. Thank you so much. Jack White,
guys.
Yeah! Wow. By the way, coming to Pittsburgh August 13th, and Raconteurs are going to be playing in New York at the Hammerstein Ballroom September 5th and 6th, and the King Theater on September 7th. He is a very nice guy. That's really cool.
You know, thoughtful answers. Yeah, many things. I mean, he really, you look at all this stuff. And even, I mean, would the vinyl resurgence have had any of the traction it had without his advocacy for
it? He's been a big proponent of it. And we didn't even, there are a number of things we didn't even touch. We didn't even talk about partying in Nashville, which Kathy went on a rager recently.
Yeah.
But he's way into that town.
More podcasts from Preston and Steve available at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.